Protect your dream home with American Family Insurance. And you can weather any storm. You'll also save up to 25% by bundling home, auto, and life. American Family Insurance. Get a quote. Find an agent at AmFam.com.
Products not available in every state. Discounts may not apply to all coverages on an auto or home policy. Discounts do not apply to life insurance policies. Visit AmFam.com to learn how discounts may apply to you. American Family Mutual Insurance Company, S.I. and its operating companies, American Family Life Insurance Company, 6000 American Parkway, Madison, Wisconsin.
Listen to Shoot the Defense. It's unbelievable, Jeff.
Hey guys, welcome to Shoot the Defense. This is the Save Association's launch. It's been months of planning, hard graft for the likes of Ian Ackley, Derek Bell, Paul Stewart, David White. As I said, hard graft. All these months of planning has come down to this. It's going to be a truly amazing event, all for CSA awareness. Hope you guys enjoy it.
Now we say, in terms of how we handle other survivors, we've said from day one, we're obviously not counsellors, we're not therapists, this is all very new to us, but still we need to know how to handle calls and emails and even messages over social media. And obviously we've had a lot of those over the past few months, and from now on obviously that's going to increase. So Ellie's agreed to continue to be a part of what we're doing here, and no doubt we'll be able to take some questions off you here and later in the day. As I say, we want to work collaboratively with organisations, be that the PFA, the FA, the Pro Game, the EFL we have meetings with, the Premier League, and with individual clubs, and also with the police. The police are represented here today. We recognise that what happened last November and what is continuing to happen now is totally unprecedented. And, you know, we don't expect and didn't expect suddenly there to be police officers on hand just waiting for 741 footballers to put their hand up and say, listen, I've got a problem I need you to deal with. We think a lot of progress has been made in terms of these individuals and getting cases into court, and again, we recognise that. We've had discussions with Operation Hydrant, who kind of oversee how all these cases are being handled, and there's been some difficulties, but hopefully we've had a meeting we've sat down just today and talked about how we can be involved with managing expectations, if you like, of survivors and helping to manage the liaison moving forward. So that's everything we've been doing. We feel as though is our choice of words maybe, but we're in a bit of a unique and privileged position to be able to be, we think, influential in the landscape moving forward in safeguarding and victim engagement. We think it's going to take a lot of legislation. We're not saying everything's wrong, because it's not. We don't believe that, but there's always progress can be made. We believe legislation change is required, particularly with the issues around mandatory reporting and criminal record checks. Lord Goddard has been very, very supportive all through this process, continues to be, and again, Lord Goddard has come on as a member of SAFE, which we're hugely grateful for, and something we definitely require. So that's where we are, that's who we are. Today is about us, you know, saying this is SAFE, this is us launching. We'll obviously take questions now, hopefully in the room, like any one of us, and then the next 2 or 3 hours there's opportunities for individual interviews with anybody at this table, and that's about us. So that's about my new conversation that went through that. Any questions? But that's our next goal then.
Specifically, what new laws do you think are needed?
Legislation wise. We believe in mandatory reporting. Obviously, mandate now with Tom Perry. What we're not going to do is reinvent mandatory reporting or present it differently. Mandate now has been there for
12 years, 12, 14 years, Tom?
Yeah, something like that, yeah.
So, you know, we believe that if you're in a regulated activity and you're there, you're working there, and you either have a strong suspicion that there's abuse taking place or you witness abuse, you should be legally obliged to tell the authorities about that. I think that's fairly straightforward. Criminal record checks don't trigger back to settings, and and that can't be right. You know, if somebody has a criminal record check and then their status changes, we believe that wherever that person is working should be told that, and that isn't automatically the case in this country. We believe that however good the FA safeguarding policies are, and we believe they are good, there's not an awful lot on our manifesto, if you like, when you go next door or these positions behind us, there's not a lot that's having to go at the FA safeguarding, but however good they are, anybody can take a bag of balls onto a field and set up their own football team. And there's nothing the FA can do about that. That requires legislation change, unaffiliated football, unaffiliated sport of any kind. So they're the major issues in terms of legislation. Obviously, what we've got there is a lot of that's about how we support victims, how we engage with victims, if you like, pre-disclosure and post-disclosure. You know, there's millions of reasons why you may choose to not disclose over the period of your life, but we know, these lads won't mind me saying, there's been some serious issues at this top table, in terms of alcohol, in terms of drugs, in terms of suicidal tendencies, in terms of all sorts of things. And they're preventable if you disclose early and you get the support that's out there for you.
I think that within the football setting, I think there's definitely that opportunity for people to access the right type of intervention, particularly if there's a live case and so that it doesn't interfere with it. As far as the wider community in the third sector, is there provision there for the sheer number of people that are coming forward? No, I don't think there is. I believe there's a huge shortfall. Obviously, football can't finance the whole of society's issues in regards to delivering support for everybody. What I do think is that other sectors, other areas, other organisations, we recognise that actually there's a need within those areas and those sports and within those activities that they could contribute actually and provide some provision for their service users. Equally, I believe the government should also improve the services that they provide, For having people to come forward and say, come forward, speak out, there's somebody there for you. To then find that you've got to sit at home for 6 to 12 months on a waiting list is unacceptable, completely unacceptable. And it shouldn't happen. And I think the government needs to look at that seriously and help the third sector and put its hand in its pocket and actually deliver something of quality. Not just a 6-week therapy programme and then leave somebody out in the community. We're very fortunate to have the provision we've got. Football, 12 months of bespoke therapy, whatever it is that you need, really quite unusual to get that level of support. Rather than see it as people being jealous of football survivors and having that as a privilege, I'd like to see that spun on its head and say, this is the benchmark, this is the standard, and that's what we should deliver to the rest of the wider community.
I mean, I came forward knowing my views are dubious to the other youngsters. When I say I came forward and support them and those that had already spoken, but then to see the tsunami, if you will, of people that came forward and coaches that were sort of brought into this, I didn't expect it to be as enormous as it was and tragic all of a sudden. And just going back to what you said there earlier, I think I saw help in the NHS many years ago because of a drug problem. And, it was, and I know what the underlying thing was now, but, I still found it difficult to get to the right person there. And that's where this is a problem. The NHS haven't, and we know they haven't got the funds, but, there also isn't that much help out there. So, hopefully SAFE can signpost people to the right psychologists, if you will, and help that they may need. And, you know, there are a lot of things that we're looking to try and achieve here. But, you know, when you look at the NHS, and from my personal experience, I think Derek would say the same, it was nothing for us. You know, we were lucky to have maybe the right person that helped us with that problem that we had at the time, and mine was particularly drugs. But it wasn't the underlying problem that was helped.
20 years I've been saying this has been happening, and thankfully now people are starting to wake up and listen. Yeah, the scale, I'd agree, but shocked or surprised that this was a far wider issue? No, my shock and surprise is that it's taken the rest of society 20 years to wake up and realise that. That's the biggest shock for me.
I think one of the things, when obviously I supported the guys in December, is obviously from the North East, as a way of, you know, society, which 20, 30 years ago was a totally different ball game, if you like. You know, there wasn't DBS checks, there wasn't safeguarding procedures, there wasn't welfare officers at clubs. You know, so you've got to remember what, you know, was around in the 70s, 80s and early 90s. It was a very weak sort of format that was driven. Things have come a long way now. Again, I'm not the therapy I've had. 10 years of therapy, I'm on medication, I've been doing for the rest of my life. But, you know, one of the things that SAVE want to do, and our aims and objectives, is to try and plug them gaps. And if there's any cracks in the system, which meetings are hard with the FA, with the PFA, with the police, you know, they understand that, you know, it can't be watertight completely, but we recognise that there is still gaps in the system. And if we can help as a group, as an organisation, other people, it's not for ourselves. We've had experiences, and it's to use our experiences that we've been through, self-therapy, court cases, I've been through the system, if you like, and know the pitfalls that still exist. But if we can work with the governing bodies and, you know, legislate law and with Parliament, with the help of, you know, Lord Goddard, then it can only be good for the future. You know, we're trying to protect the kids in the future. You know, the kids at grassroots level, that's who's going to be your next, you know, David Beckhams or Alan Shearers, whatever it may be. But if we can protect them and give them enjoyment, you know, so if they go on a Sunday or academies, you know, that they're involved in, if they can go and enjoy it, knowing as a parent that your kid is going to be safe in that environment, then, you know, if we can help any way to improve them, all for the best.
I think what happened, obviously, the offside trust went. They decided they wanted to do that very, very, very early on. We didn't make that decision. We kind of grew into this, if you like. By the time it probably became apparent that, you know, it maybe would make more sense for us to be one group, and we did have discussions to become that with Steve and Chris. Steve and Chris are fantastic guys. I think what they've done has been incredibly brave to do it very early. In fairness, they took a lot of the initial calls, and you know, they took all of that. So, absolute fair play to them in terms of that. I think they were just very wet to what they were doing at the point we held discussions with them, and we were very wet to what we were doing and very protective. As you say, the number 741 in football. There's plenty of people out there that need help and support, and there's two of them, there's four of us, and there's the support network around. So, for want of a better term, there's more than enough space for us to both do good things. So, at end and objective, I don't think there's any real difference. Maybe the way we're going about things might be a little bit different, but we will be absolutely supportive of them guys moving forward. Hopefully we will collaborate with them. Hopefully there's things they do that we'll signpost people to, and vice versa. I certainly got every intention of going to their game. I think it's on the 20th, isn't it? I think Paul the same. So there is absolutely certainly no issue. I think they are great guys.
I think good question. Whose responsibility is it? Well, actually, I think it's everybody's responsibility. The trouble is, at the moment,
I think what we've got is a situation where a lot of people are waiting for somebody else to do it on their behalf. So as parents, I think we have a responsibility to make ourselves aware if we don't know what the current thinking is. Clubs, professionals, volunteers, organisations all have a responsibility, and equally the education department has a responsibility. Don't think it's right to point the finger and say it's any one organisation's job to make sure that the raising of awareness and education is down to them. I think we very much appreciate the notion of collaborative working, multi-agency working across borders, and I think that it should be led by a multitude of different people and organisations. And I would urge any organisation to look to come together and seek advice from others on things that have worked in the past.
Because we were able to speak with the FA, and unfortunately we couldn't get to the government, we saw that as a positive and said to the FA, rather than this situation being negative to you because it's out there now, there's not much you can do about it, why don't you set a blueprint? I mean, the game is so big, why don't you set a blueprint? And then other organisations can maybe follow the blueprint that you set. And that's why we were able to speak with the FA and advise with the FA and look at their policies. And then we're hoping that all children's regulated activities, as time goes on, looks at it and goes, yeah, what a great job they did, the FA. Why don't we take a leap out of their book? And that's where it goes to rugby, or down to your scouts, or down to anything. So say we're not just all about football. We are looking to, hopefully, spread throughout children's regulated activity. It just so happens that we have a voice within football, and we're going to use that because that's the only way that we can.
What advice would you give to coaches, teachers, nursery school teachers? How would they protect themselves? Just flipping it a little bit.
Well, I think they need to make sure that the people that are working in positions or volunteering in positions of responsibility where they're looking after children or vulnerable arms should not just pay lip service to the notion of their training. There are statutory or there are basic, if you like, safeguarding courses or welfare courses, but actually there's quite a lot of other bolt-on things that you can do. You know, make yourself as trained as possible, get yourself as aware as possible. If you don't know, ask the questions. Again, it's another case of, are we just going to wait for someone to tell us we've got to do it, or are actually we going to be proactive and actually get out there and inform ourselves? I mean, shocking, you say 65% of people wouldn't know what a welfare officer is or how to report the concern. That's 65% of parents that don't know how to keep their child safe or ask the right questions at the right time. It's got to go both ways. You know, training, awareness, as Dave says, bringing the whole subject square and centre, bringing it out of the shadows and into the mainstream to be talked about. So not just parents, not just coaches, clubs, individuals, and even the young people. Don't forget, you know, what about the kids themselves, the young people? How do we create an environment where those people feel safe to come out and say something and know that they will be trusted, that they will be believed? Because at the end of the day, if we don't make the time to listen to children, as adults, we're telling them, actually, you're not that important. So if we don't make time and we look at the way we interact with children, what we're effectively saying to those is, adults haven't got the time for you. We're really not taking you seriously. So a big serious issue comes up, and something they're really worried about, well actually, 20 times before, they tried to tell mum or coach or whoever it is that something's wrong, and we haven't got the time, we dismiss it. So I think we actually need to value children's opinions more as well and listen to what they're saying.
I think it's about making people accountable. You know, I think a lot of people need to be made accountable, and I know the FA have done some recently with their referees at grassroots level, and effective will take action. They've obviously probably come out and said that. And I think it's about clubs realising that, you know, whether it be, you know, Premier League clubs, the top excellent Premier League clubs, right down to their local grassroots football on a Sunday morning, you know, everybody has a club, a responsibility and a confidence to report to your coach, to the chairman of your club, or whoever it may be. So it's about also making people accountable. And if they're not abiding by the rules, it's to take appropriate action.
I think we talk a lot about responsibility for all and reporting out. So the incident reporting protocol, we call it, is massively important. We think it should be the football clubs and all sports clubs and regulated activity. It should be a joint, you know, a committee decision. So you know, any all key personnel, so the stakeholders, the coach, the key medics. And we also think there should be some parental input to those committees. So the safeguarding meetings, maybe quarterly. So nothing can happen that doesn't get reported, because you know, I might sit here and not choose not to report something. But if Ellie's on that same committee, she's going to say to me, "Well, hang on a minute, I'm not putting my name to that." And I think that's massively important. I think let's get everything out there. Decide to where it gets reported to, be it the club or be it the county FA. And let's learn from those minor issues, so they don't turn into major issues. Instead of let's wait until something serious happens and then we'll just report that. So that's certainly one of the things we've talked to the FA about. And I think there is an issue around welfare officers in terms of it's one per club, and we've had plenty of discussions about that.
I think just chiming in some of the things that these guys have been saying and come back to your question. For me, part of this is about acknowledging that abuse does happen and that it's still happening. And I'm not saying that specifically about football, I'm talking about society, that we still have a really high prevalence rate around sexual abuse. And for me, one of the reasons why safeguarding often isn't front and centre is because there is an ongoing minimisation and a kind of thinking that it won't happen here. And therefore, you know, the irony is the more we think that, the more likely it is to happen here. But we have to acknowledge the possibility, and then that provides the impetus and motivation to place safeguarding front and centre. And I think also for me, you know, what you were saying, Ian, about making the culture as conducive as possible for young people to disclose. And part of that is strong, good relationships with adults. One quote that sticks really starkly in my mind, an interview I read with a sex offender who had abused children in a boarding school setting, and he said something like, you know, all the other teachers were really busy, they were caught up in what they were doing, so all the pupils came to me. And that just sends chills down my spine, that if we don't have those strong relationships with children, then actually they're more vulnerable to abuse and more vulnerable to a silence and not being able to talk. So we have.
Anybody?
I've got another one, sorry to be a pain. So, as a parent, I take my child to nursery or I take her to a sports centre, and there's a sign in the window that says, "All our staff are CRB checked." What does that mean?
Nothing.
Thank you.
absolutely nothing whatsoever. I've actually just received, I was in contact with the DBS just a couple of weeks ago, and was asking them some what I thought were relevant questions. I got a very lovely lady on the end of the phone that started to answer some of my questions and then suddenly realised, actually, who was this on the end of the phone? And very quickly deferred me to her manager, who then promptly told me that he wouldn't answer any questions on the telephone. Could I please send them in via email? Which I did. He then said it'll be about a week and we'll get back to you. After a week he said, "I'm really sorry, we've not got back to you yet, Ian, we will get back to you." And about another few days later, in fact last night, I received the email, and what they said to me was, "We're not going to answer any questions, what we're going to do is going to refer you to the Home Office." So last night I actually got a reply from the Home Office to answer those questions, and I won't go into the detail of them now. The point is that I think we believe that the DBS system just is not fit for purpose. I mean, it simply is not fit for purpose. I mean, you consider as well that there has to be a legal threshold for an organisation to be able to actually ask for an enhanced CRC check. Okay, so Dave's a head coach, he has to do that, that's the level of responsibility. I personally don't want to be a head coach, I think I'm just going to assist. The club hasn't got any legal right to ask me for a CRC. So if there's someone of a predatory nature, ask yourself the question, what role is that person going to take? Are they going to put themselves up as a head coach, or have we got a situation where actually people of a predatory nature can take an assistant role in lots of settings, and there is no legal way that organisation can even get a CRC check. And by the way, DBS is not a legally binding arrangement. There's no law to say you have to. It's a voluntary system. It actually has no work. You don't have to have a CRC. It's just that a lot of organisations buy into that model. And as Dave said before, there's no flagging system. You know, someone can get disbarred whilst they're in a job. The police inform the DBS, and they just happen to sit on that information. And the actual response that the lady, poor lady on the other phone gave me was that, well, they might have left. So the very organisation that is there to protect children and vulnerable adults from those that are of a predatory nature has the information, but doesn't pass it on to the organisations who need it if someone's disbarred whilst they have a live CRC check. This does not make any sense whatsoever. So, I think we'd look for a complete overhaul.
The PVG system in Scotland, and when we are in the middle of investigating all this, the PVG Scotland should be fact assessed. So our understanding is, and again, it's information is sort of direct from source, isn't easy to get, but it's going to Scotland. I understand that. In Scotland, when you register on the PVG scheme, you have a unique number and you have to register to every setting. As you register to the setting, you're checked, you're rechecked. And as much as there's not a rechecking system goes on all the time, if a complaint is made against you by any of the settings, and I believe by the police, and, you know, if it may be the family setting, that all the other settings are advised. So it triggers back to the setting, which is surely, you know, if you ask everybody, I think people just expect that that's what happens here. It's not how the system works here. And that's what we say. There's got to be a criminal record checking system that actually is valuable. It triggers back to the system. I think one quote we've had is the DBS system, it's good the day it's issued.
And that actually was, I have that in the Home Office response from me, that was their official response. It is true that it's only good the day it's issued. So you make from that what you will, really. It's something that we feel it needs looking at very, very closely, and not in a year, 2 years, 3 years' time. This is just something that needs addressing as soon as possible.
More than prolific. How would you support vulnerable adults or people that aren't fully compass mentors?
Well, it's a very, very good question. And I think the whole area of vulnerable adults is something that somewhat gets overlooked. You know, we're talking about people that may have disabilities, learning difficulties, and look at the elderly, a huge vulnerable group. A lot of those people need extra support in order to participate. And again, it's a whole subject area that really isn't touched on as far as I'm aware as of yet. It's a subject area that really, really needs tackling and looking at it in depth. And I wish I had the answers to sort of say, this is the landscape out there within that area. But the fact of the matter is that, you know, it is generally overlooked. And you're quite right to raise the point. It's something that really does need addressing in the same way as what we're looking at with the children. That's why we include the notion of children and vulnerable adults, and that we talk about kids today in football clubs. But it should follow that the principles that are in place for children are in place for vulnerable adults as well. The monitoring of those settings is possibly something where initially it needs to be looked at to try and establish more clearly what exactly the situation is, and if people are being left to be more vulnerable and exposed to risks of abuse than in other settings.
So, obviously today we're launching SAVE Association, standing for Safeguarding and Victim Engagement. Just very quickly, I'll go through the story of how we've ended up here. Obviously last November, with the disclosures of non-recent historic childhood sexual abuse in a football setting. We're all part of that, unfortunately, the forum. So myself and Derek and Ian and Paul. I think very quickly, Paul and I kind of reconnected and we played together for Man City all those years ago. Kind of got to a point where we're talking pretty much every day. I connected with Ian via social media, and then we had a long chat on the phone about one or two issues that he was putting on social media I needed to get a bit of a better handle on. And then we met Derek at Wembley. The first meeting at Wembley with the FA was, I think, probably quite a surprise to them. I think they were expecting us to go in banging the desk and, you know, there's issues here, there's issues there. And that is absolutely not the way at that time we were feeling. I think we just all wanted to understand what the landscape was in safeguarding, and to ensure that these people that were coming forward with their tales, with their stories were being supported properly. And immediately the FA convinced us that was the case. They put the survivor support plan in football in place, which is a support plan for anybody who was involved in child sexual abuse in a football setting, whether or not you became a member of the PFA, whether or not you became a professional footballer. That is accessible to everybody who was a victim within football. And it's a 12-year support plan. I think it's 130 therapists now, Ellie. Obviously it's nationwide. So we knew the FA were taking things seriously. We also knew very, very quickly that the safeguarding policies and protocols that the FA had in place were as robust as they possibly could be. So we certainly were not pointing the finger at football. I think we all just thought this all happened in a very sort of unsophisticated world that we lived in back in the 70s and 80s, where you accepted that every village, every little town had a pervert or a paedophile walking around. I know we had one in Eccles, and you just accepted that that's how it was. It was when looking back, just a weird world. So we didn't want to point the finger. We just wanted to be part of the solution, if you like. Very, very quickly, the FA let us in, pretty much open book in terms of policies. We had meetings, and again, quickly we realised that they were listening to us. We felt we were making a big difference. So we've had various meetings, just had general meetings. We've had meetings with Operation Hydrant that oversee everything to do with these cases. We've had meetings with the Pro Game, the English Football League, the Premier League. Dr. Ellie Hansen here has been a real sort of pivotal point in all of those. I mean, so I think you've attended every single one. Been very, very supportive of us, just particularly in terms of self-care and how we handle the discussions with other survivors, if you like. So that's a massively important part of what we're doing and what we're going to be doing moving forward. I think if you look at the slides as they go through, apart from all the brilliant endorsements we've been given, the way we just decided to map it out was as a football pitch. There's 11 kind of key issues on that pitch, and when we've worked long and hard to get to what we're calling our positions. So we talk about responsibility for all, which we believe is a really big thing in football, in sport, and in any setting. Within football in particular, you can have one welfare officer at a club that oversees everything, and that one welfare officer might have 600, 700 children. So we think that's fundamentally wrong. It's probably our only sort of real, if you like, criticism of the FA. That's the only thing we've got a potential issue directly with the FA with. So there we go, mandatory reporting. Criminal record checks, don't know why he's playing left back with number two on his back, to be fair, but can't be right. So there's all the things on there. Mandatory reporting is a big thing, you know, what's the word I'm looking for there, Ian? In a setting,
it's a major issue.
Regulated activity, there we go. Any regulated activity, we believe that if you have suspicions of abuse or you witness abuse, you should be legally obliged to report that. That isn't the case in this country. Criminal record checks are a big thing. We don't have a system in England where The DVS system, as much as everybody thinks it's absolutely amazing, it does not trigger back to a setting. So you get a criminal record check. It's good on the day it's issued. If you do something in the meantime, we need a system we believe that absolutely triggers back to that setting to say, look, there's an issue with this individual, and you can risk assess. So just have a look at the slide. Obviously, Paul's over in the corner there. Ian sat here. Derek sat there. We'll have a wander around. Any questions you want to come and talk to us about, we'll obviously more than welcome to do that. I'm sorry about the heat in here. It's so hot. I do apologise. That's about it. I think I've talked enough today, to be honest with you, if that's okay. So we'll enjoy Prosecco, and we'll have a wander around and have a chat with you all. Okay, thank you.
So, Shooter Defence, Save Association, we're finally here. I'm joined by Ian Ackley, face to face.
Absolutely.
Not over the phone.
Pleasure to meet you.
Absolutely. Pleasure's mine, mate. So, it's been a fantastic day. Great setup.
So far, so good.
Yeah.
Very happy so far. Touch wood. Absolutely. Yeah.
What do you think you've got from this so far?
Well, just the enthusiasm people are showing for Save and the genuine interest in what we're doing. I wasn't sure what response we were going to get, and obviously a bit nervous and anxious about it, but overwhelmed with the response. I'm really, really happy with it.
Fantastic. And what media outlets have been here today?
Well, I think BBC, ITV, Sky. I know that Radio 5 have been down. We've had the Daily Mirror down. I think there are some other media agencies, yourselves here.
Well,
as well.
Yeah,
generally, the press release room was packed.
Good.
So some of the guys, I don't even know which channels or which media agencies they were representing, but it's got to be a good thing, I think.
And you've had a couple of charities here as well, haven't you?
Have we?
Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, I've got one of their business cards here, but yeah, with people with learning disabilities.
Okay.
There's a charity here, I forget what they're called, I actually shouldn't really remember it. I spoke to the guy that found it. But yeah, they were really impressed with the things that you guys are doing, and yes, so far so good.
That's fantastic news. I didn't realise. I've not had a really chance to sort of get around the room and speak to people yet generally, but I'm sure it will as the day goes by. But that's fantastic news.
Great stuff. And what would you say are your long and short term ambitions for this? Because obviously it's a starting point.
Yeah.
You can't foresee the future. I guess you're just taking it each day as it comes.
Yeah.
So what have you got for like a 5 year, 10 years? Is that something you guys have got?
Well, it is, but it's very hard to put that timescale on it at the moment. I think I said to you last time we spoke, you know, maybe mandatory reporting would be something that would take longer.
Yeah.
Actually, after I spoke to you about that, I thought about it, actually, that's probably one of the ones we want in the shorter term, actually, that we need it now. So I'd say 5 years might be realistic, but in my heart, I would like to see that pushed through as soon as possible. So, you know, we've got the 11 charter points we've got up. I think as we see things develop, organisations and individuals make themselves known to us, then that will give us a clearer idea about which ones we can move on where and how long it's going to take. So,
and on a final note, how much support have you had from the football community? Because I know Robbie Fowler, Tony Coton, Ian Bishop, they've all weighed in, even Gascoigne weighed in with testimonials, so to speak. Paul Lake is here as well.
Yeah.
Any more feedback from other guys?
Just generally been very positive. I mean, speaking to Paul today, he was really positive about going forward and possible opportunities to work together. And it's just a real pleasure and honour to have people of such stature within the sport coming out and showing their support, really.
Fantastic. Well, Ian, thank you very much for your time. It's been a pleasure being here.
You're welcome.
For the invitation.
No, thanks for coming.
Anytime. And catch up soon. So, Shoot the Defence, Save Association, we're here. I'm with Paul Stewart. It's an absolute pleasure to talk to you finally face to face.
Yes.
We spoke numerous times.
We've spoke numerous times over the phone and via text. Yeah, so yeah. Pleasure meeting you.
Pleasure's all mine. I haven't told you this story, but I remember that 91 FA Cup final, because I'm a Man United fan, but I've got a lot of Spurs supporting relatives watching the game with my cousin. We went absolutely potty when you got our equaliser, and I think he's actually jealous that I'm here talking to you.
Really?
Like, yeah, Cup final hero and all that kind of stuff, so it's actually great to
yeah, talk yeah. To you. I mean, it's a long time ago now, of course. But yeah, still fond memories. I was back at White Hart Lane for the last game there with all the other players, as we call them, legends, if you will. So it was an honour to be invited for the last game.
Absolutely fantastic. And this event has been brilliant. There's been the turnout, the reception from the press especially.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's nice that something positive is coming out of a situation which, you know, to say wasn't ideal is an understatement. I hope that people see that we're there to help, to basically make it safer for our future generations, really. I mean, this is a game we all love. I hate the fact that it's been tainted by the abuse that went on in the 70s, 80s and 90s. But we've got to look forward. You know, there's no point dwelling on the past. And what Sabre are doing is trying to look forward, but also in a way that makes it safer for our future. You know, David Beckham's, Ryan Giggs, you know, Gascoigne's. You know, we still want to bring that talent through, but make sure that it's safe to bring it through.
Absolutely. And one thing I didn't get the chance to ask in the press conference. Is this something that you guys are planning to take abroad? Because obviously, as you know, the mentality abroad, especially in the Mediterranean, is far, far different from the UK. It seems that we're more open to talking about these kind of things, but it's still a taboo subject in these countries, where it's like, keep it hush, you know, it's embarrassing. Is this something that you guys want to take abroad?
We're going to have to see where SAVE takes us, really.
Okay.
I mean, our voice now is through football in the UK, of course. Although, you know, when we first disclosed, and I certainly know myself, I did an interview with Danish TV, so they were aware that they had an issue within sport in Denmark. So who knows? I mean, in the future, it may be something that is taken on board. And what we've got to do is we've got to make sure, as you just said, is that it isn't a taboo subject, because if it's happening, then it can't be taboo anymore. We've already suffered that taboo, suffered the what society will choose us on. And that's not just through us as footballers, but you look at the Jimmy Savile scenario. So we've got to make sure that it is something that we speak about. We are aware that it's out there, but we address it. And then hopefully, by doing this in the UK, at grassroots level within the UK, then other countries do sit up and listen and say, look, yeah, we are.
When it comes to reporting in certain incidents and whatnot, I know that Kick It Out have got a similar sort of thing in terms of a reporting system on their website. And I think they had, between 2012 and 2013, there were 77 reports of racism. And then 2 years later, it was like 300. So that's a massive boost. Do you feel that you guys are going to have something like a similar kind of impact with reporting system?
It wouldn't be right for me to say it helps, because I wouldn't like to see the numbers go up, because that means a lot of people have suffered. But what we can make sure is that there is somewhere out there that people can turn to if it has been a problem, if they've struggled to disclose, because I don't expect everybody is like me and is comfortable, if you will, disclosing. So all we want to do is say, look, there's a network there that you can approach, say, and we will guide you to the right people that can help you.
Great stuff. Well, Paul, it's been an absolute pleasure talking to you, mate. Thank you for your time. And I'll let you enjoy the rest of you.
Thanks very much.
Thank you, buddy. Appreciate it. Thank you very much. And so, Shoot the Defence with the third gentleman interviewed today, David White. How are you doing?
I'm good.
You? Great, thank you. Thank you for the invitation.
No problem whatsoever. We'll have a good day, hopefully.
It's been fantastic. Yeah. How about you?
No, I think it's been great. Yeah, it's obviously, you're always slightly nervous as to who's going to turn up. And so, you know, walking into that room and it being absolutely chock a block with the media people and interest was great. It made it all worthwhile. So hopefully we've announced ourselves as being here now. Hopefully we won't let people down.
And that's a steal as well.
Oh, I don't know. I wasn't expecting so many people in there, but yeah, it was okay. And great questions, good contribution by you.
Thank you.
It's always nice. And I think it went well.
No, I think it went remarkably well. I mean, you look at the people that are here.
Yeah, absolutely.
The support that you guys have received fantastic.
Yeah, I think so.
And I think it can only go from strength to strength.
Yeah, let's hope so. That's certainly the plan, yeah. Just see where it takes us.
And what kind of response have you received from Premier League clubs at the moment?
Well, to be honest, we presented to both the Premier League and the English Football League probably 2 or 3 months ago. Obviously, we've had a long period in the middle of where football's got to sleep, really, only, you know, for a couple of months. So it's probably, when, you know, as we come back over the next couple of weeks into football, we'd expect to sort of see what those responses are looking like. We'll probably do that, not directly with the pro game, probably again through the FA. I think it's important we keep that consistency. So we'll look forward to that probably in the next 2 or 3 weeks, hopefully we'll know where we're going with that.
I know this is going to be a bit of a long-winded answer to this question, but what do you guys expect from the FA? Because you've got those 11 points. Is there anything in particular you want from them?
No, I think just to allow us to keep it going. That's it. You know, it may be that hopefully it's something that's on the way forever. A lot of those 11 points. A lot of those 11 points don't really concern me. I think there's some legislative things that we believe need addressing. So we talk about welfare officers and the ratio. We just want to stay involved. We want to. We talk to the FA about maybe doing some workshops around our sort of lived experiences. If you like, I think that's a very important thing we can do. We can help out the county FAs and stuff like that. So we're just really just going to see how it develops. We you know, in all honesty, we haven't got a master plan to say we're going to do this, and this. Until really we've put ourselves out there and said, this is something here, give us a call, get in touch with us. We don't know what the program's going to require from us.
Fair enough. And from a promotional perspective, obviously you guys have got social media, you've got the website now.
Yes. Yeah, yeah.
SaveAssociation.com.
Yes, that's it, yeah.
How else do you guys intend on promoting the charity itself?
I think obviously social media is going to be massive. We need to be active on there. You've got to do that all the time. Hopefully now we've got media in chess, we can maintain those relationships with the media people that have been here today. Obviously via the FA, hopefully the Premier League and the EGFL, they're going to be able to. We're going to deliver services for them that they're going to be able to endorse and promote and get into the game that way. And obviously we've got Lord Goddard, who's our voice in Parliament, if you like. So there's various ways we're doing that.
Great stuff. And on a final note, local authorities, are they getting involved as much as you'd like them to?
We've not had any conversations with local authorities. In all honesty, today again, that's something we need to be looking at in the future. At this moment in time, everything we've done has been focused directly around football. And I suppose the bigger issue stuff. I didn't expect to be sat here today talking about mandatory reporting, about criminal record checks, but the wider picture stuff. Maybe it comes as a surprise to me. I think, like, you know, when some of these issues you talk to your average man on the street, and it's staggering that the situation with DBS and stuff like that. So, no, we've not had any discussion with local authorities, but hopefully in the future we'll be doing that.
I think in a situation like this, when you discuss it with other people involved in a bigger scale, you always tend to unravel.
Yes, I've seen that happening today as well. It's great to see all these people here who've come along to support us and also showing interest in what we're doing. I've had various conversations today again that I didn't maybe expect to be having, but that's fantastic. But yeah, you say things do unravel, and hopefully we can do some good.
Great stuff, and good luck to you. It's been absolutely fantastic talking to you. I go. That 5-1, it still hurts.
The United 5-1, I'm sorry about that. I do apologise.
It's all right, thank you very much. Appreciate your time. Thank you.
Cheers, pal. Thank you.
Thank you. Appreciate it. Thanks for the invitation. Cheers. Eric Bell, welcome to Shoot the Fence. Thank you for inviting me to your lovely launch.
Yeah, it's great. Thanks for supporting us. Another group that's trying to make change. I like yourselves all. We know about yourself, and it's great to be a support for ourselves. And then today,
it's an absolute pleasure, mate. I'm going to need to know, which I haven't asked the others, how long does something like this take to prepare? I mean, you guys have had a lot of response from ex-pros, Paul Lake's been here. How do you guys plan something like this?
To be honest, we're still very much just going with the flow. You know, obviously we've met with the FA and we've been working 8 months with the FA, and what we didn't want to do was just jump into something and launch something that we didn't have any meaningful objectives or policies or, you know, we wanted to make sure they were in place before we actually launched. We were going to launch at the end of the season, but we decided not because we're still in discussion with the police and tying up a few things with them, tying up a few things up with the PFA. PFA and FA have been fantastic in their support. So we just wanted to wait to the right time. We thought the start of the season would be the right time. The event, yeah, great. You know, there's a lot of interest. We continue. Like yourself, when you come to start, it's the start of the journey. You know, this is the start of the journey. It's not, you know, that's it, the launch and whatever. We've got a lot of work to be done, and both your positive work around what we're trying to achieve.
Out of the 11 key points that you guys have conjured up, obviously reporting would be, I wouldn't say the main one, but that's the starting point, isn't it? Which one do you think follows? Which one would you say is just as, if not, are they all as important as each other?
I think me personally, I'm very big on mental health. Having been through a court case, having been through the system, having done the journey of, you know, giving a statement, going to court, the after effects of court, my own personal journey, I've been sectioned under the mental health act myself, I still receive therapy. So, you know, it's an ongoing thing. So for me, from a personal point of view, but also as a group, I think, you know, mental health in football is a big thing. I was lucky enough to be chairman of Gates Football Club for 7 years, and I've seen sort of the kids come out of academies, been in academies since the age of 16, and all of a sudden just told them, you're not good enough. And became the non-league club, the professional club now is Gated, come to my club, and the trauma on them really affected them. And then the other scale of it, we had Newcastle in the Premiership, we had Premiership players coming in to Gated for whatever reason, got released. And, you know, very wealthy people. But they didn't know how to cope with day-to-day life. One lad in particular, 28-year-old, played Premiership football, didn't know how to pay the electric bill. You know, so, and again, that same particular lad, he suffered with mental health, he suffered with drugs, he suffered with alcohol, he just couldn't cope from having the money, but just coming back into the mainstream sort of society, if you like. So there's a whole range of issues that I think the FA and the PFA need to pick up on. Yeah. And work with Sport and Chance, although, you know, they have their own clinics and stuff like that. But I think the pick up on mental health is a massive, massive thing. I know, obviously, the government are bigger in a minute, but I think the sporting institutions can look at it and say, you know, let's help ex-players. And I think, you know, people will suffer. I mean, Gaza is a typical example. With him the other week, he looks really well at the minute, which is great. But, you know, people dip in and out. So I think there's some way we can help people through the mental health stage.
Yeah.
And going to court can be stressful. I'd say mental health is probably the other issue that I'm quite concerned about.
It's interesting you mentioned the mental health, because you've got the Mental Health Football Association. Personally, I don't think they get the credit they deserve, and I don't think they get the exposure they deserve. Whereas on the other side, you've got other charities like mine, who are doing exceptionally well. Is this something that you guys are looking to tap into in terms of working alongside other charities?
100%. You know, we aren't behind them. You know, we're not an organisation. You know, I'm not a psychologist, I'm not a police officer, I haven't got them skills. What we're looking at is a signpost, but work alongside Mind, Sport and Chance, police authorities. So if a victim comes forward or somebody wasn't feeling great, at least then we can signpost them. And you're right in what you're saying, there's a lot of wonderful stuff being done out there by charities and volunteer groups that don't get recognised, and I think it's raising that awareness as well, you know, about some really good positive groups who can help you. You mentioned, yeah, they do a lot of great work, but they're not heard of yet. So part of SAVE is taking things on board, but we're not at the end, or we're not going to change the world. But at least we can signpost them into people where they can help. And that's what we're about doing.
From an economical standpoint, look, I don't really know too much about politics, but all I know is that there are cuts in the police force. Is that a worry in terms of the whole reporting and them doing anything about it?
Yeah, I mean,
it is what it is, kind of thing.
I think you're right in what you're saying. I mean, we've had meetings with Operation Hydrant 3 years ago to look around child abuse in the country. They've had their funding cut by government, so they aren't as productive as what they were initially. And again, talking to different victims and going forward. You know, to be fair, in the Thumbria Police, I've worked alongside Operation Tide. It's been fantastic. They've done a lot of good work, kept people well informed. On the other scale of side of things, another police force, because of budgets, you know, they have a lot of touch with people. So there's an massive inconsistency right throughout every police force in the country. What we're trying to do is work with police force to have some sort of blueprint, that at least to follow the blueprint. And again, it's a resource thing. The Thumbria Police may be different from Greater Manchester Police, may be different from Devon Police, because of funding. What we're trying to do is some sort of collaboration right across the board, that at least the country is the minimum sort of standard, what we think they should be doing for victims.
Absolutely. And what's your take on this misconception that paedophiles and child abusers are only within coaching or whatnot? Because it could be relatives, it could be friends and families, it could be anyone, couldn't it? It's not as if they're walking around with a sign on their head, so.
Yeah, I mean, if you look at, you know, I'm sure you've done the statistics, a lot of paedophiles of nearly family members and one way or the other, it's quite a high proportion of paedophiles actually are within the same family. Again, that's the concern, or how you tackle that is a different matter. So, yeah, it is a concern. Yeah.
Yeah, and there's a study that said 1 in 35 adults have paedophile tendencies. It's scary. It's scary. It's scary. You think about it, you've got to a football ground, it's 35,000 people, 3,500 of them.
Yeah, yeah. You know, we don't want to scare them. Don't get us wrong, because we want people to come forward and we want people to enjoy the football, kids to enjoy the football or sport, whatever the sport they're in, swimming, cricket, basketball, whatever sport, let's enjoy it. But let's raise the awareness and educate people to say if there's a problem of bullying or harassment or something that may not be right, they've at least got a point of contact to go to, whether it be a welfare officer or somebody like that. At least the kid or the parent knows who to be, who the point of contact is. And I think that is an education point of view, that not everybody is aware. And if we can raise that awareness and education of who is there, then, you know, that'll be all for good.
Great stuff. And just on a final note, obviously this is something that is not going to disappear straight away. It might take 10, 20, 30 years. You know, it might never end, but do you think this is the catalyst, what you guys are doing is the catalyst to get spread the word, for people to actually understand that this is a really severe issue, we're no longer tackling subject?
Yeah, I mean, the four of us come together, I didn't know Paul, David, or Ian, obviously I'd seen Paul Payne, a bit of a hero, it wasn't a whitey, but that's a different matter, but no, you know, so to come together, and then all of a sudden, by chance, we had a lot of synergy together, and we had a lot of experience about what we've been through. And if we can use our experience to help other people raise awareness, come forward, educate people, and also make people accountable. You know, we've got to make people accountable. If something goes wrong or is not good, then that club should be accountable for that. So hopefully we're working on that. The longevity of it, who knows? You know, that's one of the reasons why we took our time about launching, because we want to make sure that there are 11 shirts on our subject on our strip on the football pitch, each one of them, we've got some content behind. And then once we sort of tackle something that we think the FA or PFA or whoever it may be has picked it up, we've got a suspension. You know, so we've got not just the 11 on the pitch, we've also got in the back of our minds something to replace it. So it's not as though once these 11 subjects are all dealt with, some might take a month to do. Mandatory reporting, as you know, it's a massive thing that needs government changing. That could take a while, but we're banging on the drum with that. You know, with other organisations, we're going to bang on the drum with that to get mandatory reporting put in. But that might be a little bit longer than something else. So some are quick fixes, some are long things, but at least we've got some sort of plan and objective. And who knows in 5 years' time that where we'll be, but certainly if you can make some sort of change in a short space of time, but also a long space of time, then
fingers crossed, such words. Thank you very much. Thank you very much. Appreciate your time. Thank you.
Okay, so I've just returned from the Save Association launch. It's been a fantastic event. I'd just like to thank Ian, Derek, Paul and David for inviting me and for their hospitality. As I said, it's been a remarkable event. The turnout was brilliant. Very, very pleased to have spoken to the guys face to face and heard their opinions. So yeah, feel free to visit the Save Association website, which is saveassociation.com, and get involved. Hope you guys enjoyed the interviews and the show, and we'll be back very soon. Take care.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to Chumbacasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.